Are you interested in the current state of the health industry? Want to know more about nutrition, natural medicine, holistic healthcare, and more? You're in the right place. Welcome to Nutrition Prescription with your host, integrative health and nutrition coach, Angela Atkins. She dishes the dirt on a bunch of health topics with a social consciousness flair. Here's Angela.
Welcome again to Nutrition Prescription. This is Angela Atkins of Your Health Unbound, and today we have a super special guest, someone that I have followed now for years, and I'm happy to introduce you to Reed Davis. Let me tell you a little bit about Reed. He is a holistic health practitioner and a certified nutritional therapist. We have that in common. He's an expert in functional lab testing and holistic lifestyle medicine. He's the founder of Functional Diagnostic Nutrition, that's FDN, and the FDN certification course. Reed served as the health director and case manager at a wellness center in Southern California for over 10 years and now teaches the FDN course with over 2,500 trainees or graduates in 50 countries. Today, Reed is known as one of the most successful and experienced clinicians in the world, having provided functional lab assessments to over 10,000 clients. Well, that is some amazing credentials, Reed. I am so happy to have you here.
Well, thanks so much. I'm glad to be here. And I can see that you do an awful lot of really good work, too.
Well, thank you.
So we're birds of a feather flock together, right?
Yeah, we're here to provide a better lifestyle for people using natural methods. And I think that's the really key issue here. So the one thing I really want to get down and start about talking about the topic we have today on adrenal fatigue. And I think that's something that my audience especially would be interested in because there's a lot of discussion. Is it real? What does it mean? What does it mean to me in a diagnosis? How do I deal with something when someone says they have adrenal fatigue? And so I'll let you take center stage on this and tell us from your perspective.
Well, thanks very much for that opportunity. I used to use that term all the time because it's a great construct. You know, what it means is that you're under stress and the adrenals are responding because they make the stress hormones. They make cortisol and they make some other hormones as well. But basically, they're responsible for cortisol levels. So if you're under stress, your cortisol is going to go up. Cortisol is it's a steroidal type hormone. It's going to help you increase your blood sugar. It basically backs up adrenaline. So it lasts longer than adrenaline, though. And so it can have some deleterious effects. It actually is a catabolic hormone. It will break your body down if it's around too long. And if you look at people who are under chronic stress all the time, like let's take long distance runners, you know, they're going out and running 10 miles a day or something like that. And the body's not meant to do that. That's not normal or natural. And so they're really stressing out their bodies on a physical level. And so their cortisol is high, and they basically get emaciated. The cortisol will eat up all your protein and to try to turn it into blood sugar. Well, your brain needs blood sugar to stay active. And so it's really a survival mechanism. It's a survival organ, if you will. I mean, they all are. But the adrenals take a lot of the blame when you start to feel crappy. So you can take a certain amount of chronic stress. I mean, you might have relationship, mental, emotional kind of stress, job stress, financial stress, all that kind of stress. And the adrenals act the same way. The cortisol goes up, starts to break your body down. And then it could be pain or aches or let's say you get in a car accident. You're in pain all the time. It's another form of stress. The adrenals will act the same way, raise cortisol. By the way, cortisol happens to be an excellent painkiller and anti-inflammatory as well. So if you get punched or knocked around a little bit, your body's going to respond the same way. It's a survival mechanism. It's going to kick in, raise cortisol, and there's other hormones involved, like I said. And finally, what about chemical stressors? What about breathing bad air or eating foods that you're sensitive to or electromagnetic frequency exposures and things? And so there's a lot of, we just mentioned the mental emotional type stress, the physical trauma, injury, bad posture, weakness type stress, getting knocked around. And then there's the chemical stress, most of which is hidden, by the way. The air you breathe, which in your food and things. It's stressful to the body. Now, what happens is after a while, because you can, you have this survival, you know, we can take some of it some of the time, but when it's chronic and when you don't even know where some of it's coming from, well, then you start to feel lousy and your cortisol levels can actually go down, you know, that you start to get this interference, and you have to understand what the signaling mechanisms are in order for the adrenals to produce that cortisol. But the adrenals are going to take the blame. Oh, you're in adrenal fatigue because your cortisol has gone low. And so it's a good construct, but it is just a construct. It's not really scientifically backed up very well.
So this and is I could go into all that. Mm-hmm. This is typically what someone would hear in a conversational way, but in the medical jargon nowadays, that is really not how we phrase it, because it really has to do more with the whole gland, the whole axis of glands that work together. Is that more how you phrase it now?
Exactly. We call it HPA, which is hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, HPA axis dysfunction, because the adrenals really are just getting a signal from the pituitary, which gets a signal from the hypothalamus. And that's the real master gland, the hypothalamus pituitary. They're two little organs that are up in your brain. They're attached to each other. They talk to each other and send out signals to the adrenals. And so one of the reasons your cortisol goes down is because there's just this stress feedback mechanism that gets dysfunctional. You get lack of sensitivity. You know, it's called resistance to these hormones and other input. And so what we find out is that, you know, anything that is any kind of distress, like there's actually good stress, but anything that's distressful will have an effect on the whole system, the hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenals, the hypothalamus, pituitary, and thyroid,
pituitary and thyroid have such an interaction there that it does have an effect, and I'm going to bring it back to my clients who come with terms like adrenal fatigue. Sometimes they have hypothyroidism to go along with it. So mm-hmm. I think that's a good point to bring together.
Right, and they don't call it thyroid fatigue, do they?
No.
You know, but it's the exact same thing going on. Now, there's another one, the hypothalamus pituitary and gonads, which in women are the ovaries. So they don't call it ovary fatigue. When you don't have a sex drive, they just call it poor sex drive. Oh, there must be something wrong with your brain. You know, so it's really kind of interesting how the adrenals have been tagged this way. There's a lot of input, you know, your diet, your sleep patterns, your exercise, the amount of stress and the various kinds of stress, any supplementation you might be taking, all that can have an effect and can either support these functions or can be a contributor to the chaos. We call it metabolic chaos in my world. So we've pretty much stopped using the term adrenal fatigue. It sounds a little technical to say HPA axis dysfunction, but it's a more fair and accurate scientific term.
And I think it helps people understand what's involved in their bodies rather than just saying adrenal fatigue. They understand that there's multiple organs and multiple hormones that are involved. It's better to understand that, well, I'm just worn out. It really, your body is not functioning optimally. And because of that, there are multiple things you may need to do in order to regain that health that you want, get the energy back. So what is the first thing you look at when someone comes with HPA axis dysregulation?
Well, if we see on a test that the cortisol to DHEA, because DHEA is another big hormone produced by the adrenals. We haven't mentioned it yet, but there's three different zones in the adrenals on top of the adrenal cortex, on top of the the medulla, the adrenal medulla. So the adrenal medulla, which is the center of it, these are two little organs on top of your kidneys, by the way. The adrenal medulla produces adrenaline, basically. They call it now norepinephrine, epinephrine, but we just call it adrenaline. That's fine. Now, the other three layers in the adrenals produce other hormones. The two main ones would be cortisol and DHEA. That's the parent of your sex hormones. It metabolizes and breaks down into testosterone and estrogen and these other things. So what happens when someone comes to us with adrenal fatigue, quote unquote, or HPA acid dysfunction is their sex hormones are also out of balance. And so what we do is we look for the stressors, and that's our job as health detectives. Look, I'm not a physician who can write a prescription and say, oh, here's your adrenal hormone that you need. Just like they do with thyroid. I mean, you could have HPA thyroid or HP thyroid dysfunction and be quote unquote hypothyroid, when it's really just that there's nothing wrong with the thyroid. It's just getting improper signaling to keep the hormone levels right. And, so most doctors would just write a prescription for thyroid to get the levels back up. Well, we take a different approach with the thyroid. We take the same approach we take with the adrenals, which is to find out what's really wrong. Like, where's the stress and how can we reduce it or manage it and try to get things back in balance?
So you look first at lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Is that the first thing you do after you have your testing? You then explore the person's lifestyle to see what you can help balance stress or reduce it to a manageable rate?
Yes, but lifestyle is kind of a misnomer. Lifestyle. So that you have to break it down a little more easily, a little more like bite-sized pieces. So I've determined over many, many years, 20 years, that there's five main elements to quote unquote lifestyle. And what is lifestyle? It's an epigenetic program. It's going to program all your cells, tissue, organs, and systems. They have an innate intelligence. And what they want is to be, nurtured and to get good signals in. And there's a lot of the opposite around. They're being denatured, they're being inhibited, they're being assaulted on a daily basis. So the five areas that I've determined will help with adrenal fatigue or thyroid dysfunction or any other dysfunction you want to mention is diet. First of all, it's absolutely no arguments that the standard American diet is deleterious. It will ruin your health. So it has signals. If you eat the wrong foods, it's putting bad signals into all of your cells, all of your tissues, all of your organs, every system in your body. So you don't want to eat wrong. You want to eat right. And it really, really, really matters. And so when you say lifestyle, I've broken that down into DRESS, diet, and rest, of course. We know sleep affects every cell, tissue, organ, and system in your body. And what would the E stand for? So if diet, rest, E is exercise.
Exercise.
Yes. Sitting is the new smoking. Hardly anyone's dumb enough to smoke anymore, but they do sit a lot. Well, that's becoming the new smoking. Like, that's as bad for your health as smoking if all you do is sit. So we have diet, rest, exercise. And then the two S's in my dress moniker is stress management and supplementation. Now, I don't sell my own supplement brand or anything like that. I'm not pushing supplements, but I know a lot about them. And they can be very supportive. They can replace nutrients that aren't in food. They can stimulate as needed. For instance, your immune system, when you get on a plane, you want to take some zinc and some echinacea maybe to stimulate, boost your immune system a little bit, and because you're going to be exposed to some sick people, things like that. So it's diet, rest, exercise, stress management, and supplements. And on the stress management, it's often the hardest area, and it's where we run a lot of the labs and testing that we do. Because people have food sensitivities, toxicity, all kinds of things that can actually be measured. If you can do some saliva, blood, urine, and stool testing, we can pretty much figure it all out. What are all the stressors, the dysfunctions that can be corrected or healed or brought back into balance and things like that.
And I agree with you on that, because I know I have my clients have testing, and it's so easy to say, okay, we see these are out of balance, but how do we guide them back? And many who would go to their doctors, they would get a prescription. Oh, here's just something simple. Mm-hmm. Take this, you'll be good. And I'm certain you're the same way. What I try to do is, what's the most natural, least invasive way of managing that? And to do that, it may be, first for me, is always nutrition. That's the way I go. And then supplementation. I agree with you on that, because we can't always eat every nutrient that we need, but we can manage to get some additional support from the supplements.
Exactly. So that's the first reason supplements are important, because food just is pretty low quality these days. Even organic food, I've found, maybe you found this too, Angela, that it's good to eat because it doesn't have pesticides, herbicides, insecticides, rodenticides, and these other things. So you're avoiding, you're kind of eliminating or reducing certain stressors. Those are hidden stressors that, again, they raise that cortisol and they start to break your body down. Okay. And, you know, they're very toxic in and of themselves, but, you know, they're carcinogenic in some cases and things. So eating organic is good for what you avoid by eating it, but how much extra nutrition are you really getting?
Right.
You know, maybe not so much.
You have to have that variety. So, it's not just eat, because you can eat all sorts of things that are organic. You can have organic cane sugar, but it's not going to give you the nutrition that you need. Your body's not going to get the nutrients it needs to be healthy and fuel your cells. So it goes beyond just organic.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we are designed to get a abundance of vitamins, minerals, essential fatty acids, the amino acids, the antioxidants, and things all from diet. So if your food's deficient in those, it's going to have a long-term effect, you know, and so we can correct that to some extent.
Absolutely. I agree with you. So as you address each one of these areas in your dress protocol, how is there like a way that we can give the listeners some, how do I address this for myself? What do I start looking for? Who, you know, what do I seek out for myself to help address this issue?
Well, if you know, write down DRESS, diet, rest, exercise, stress reduction, supplements, you could start with your weakest area. Like, you know, there might be certain stressors that you think about, relationships and your job, you know, like your boss and your kids are misbehaving or something. But, you know, some of that's sort of unavoidable. You just have to remember, it's stress management. You can't get rid of certain stress, but you can manage it. You can learn techniques to deal with those things. So if that's your particular area, you have to go after that area. And then you would go after the next week. You know, once you start forming some good habits there, what's your next area? Oh, sleep. I'm not sleeping. Well, what time do you go to bed? If you stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning watching movies, you deserve what you get. You know, but so go to bed at 10 o'clock, you know, and start forming good sleep hygiene. Turn all the lights off. Don't have a TV in your room or radio and that stuff. You know, charge your cell phone in the next room if you can. Get rid of the electromagnetic interference. Make sure it's dark. Make sure it's quiet. You can take a hot bath. You can drink some valerian or chamomile tea. You can do some things to relax. You can also do some meditation. Listen to some tapes. You can do things that will quiet you down. Get out of the light. Don't have blue light, the full spectrum lighting of any sort after dark. You know, then your melatonin should come up. Your cortisol should go down. You should start to be relaxed. You can do some things to try to at least fall asleep before midnight. You know, 10 o'clock is what I found to be a good target.
Having the room cooler also helps. I think some people tend to opt for warmer rooms, especially in winter months. We live on the East Coast and it gets cold, and people tend to turn their thermostats up, but it's better in the bedroom to have it a little lower.
This is such a great conversation. We could do a whole show on sleep, you know, because it's really a critical part of health, and cooler's better, but maybe put some socks on if your feet are cold. You know, it just depends on your circulation and things. There's lots of tricks. Mm-hmm. You can look up sleep hygiene and you'll find just a million tricks, you know, and you've got to find the right combination for you. The next trick is to sleep all the way through the night, you know, see if you can not wake up, and that might have to do with blood sugar or detoxification processes or lots of things. So there's work to be done. So the point was to look at the next weakest area. If it's exercise, well, you know, start slow. Don't hurt yourself, but start doing something every day and then build upon it. With diet, I can give you a couple of quick diet tips. I don't know how much time I could spend on it, but
what we need to know. I mean, I've got an audience here that really wants to understand how to live their lives the best they can, because they're looking at their next phase of their life and they want it to be as healthy as they can make it.
You know, I'm 66 years old, so I'm right there with you. I'm trying to not necessarily put more years in my life, but more life in my years. You know,
absolutely.
That's kind of a corny expression, but the truth is, if you're not getting up every day with your feet hitting the floor, feeling pretty good, something's wrong, and you get to work on it. And if you work on these five main areas, diet, rest, exercise, stress management, and supplements, you might need some guidance, you might need some help, but you can do some of it on your own. The diet should be one that gives you lots of energy, for one thing. If your energy's low, look at your macronutrient ratios. The macronutrients are the proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. The micronutrients are the vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, phytonutrients, and other little parts. But for right now, Yeah. So if you just want to talk, how does it look on your plate? You can't see vitamins. You can see protein. You can see fat, and you can see carbohydrates. Those are very visible. And the way it looks on your plate, you should just kind of look at it like a pie chart. And, you know, everyone's going to be a little bit different. Some people are going to be a lot different from each other. There are people who do very well on high-carb diets. You know, they might not be from around here, but there's people in the world like that. They just, it's genetically programmed, their macronutrient ratios. So if you get that right, if you get the mac, that's your fuel mixture. So if you get your fuel mixture right, the right amount of protein and fat versus carbs. So protein and fat kind of come together. If you eat a steak, it's got both. You know, and you might need a leaner steak for one person who needs less fat, or a fattier steak for a person who needs more fat. And there are people who do very well that way. And then a certain amount of carbs in relationship to that. So if it's the right fuel mixture, you should have, number one, good energy. And the kind of energy where 2 hours after you eat a real meal, you're not really craving anything. You've got enough energy to get to the next fuel stop, if you will.
See, I talk with my clients about the carbohydrates, because there's a lot of talk about carbohydrates. I tend to define them separately, that there are refined carbohydrates, and then there are carbohydrates that are filled with the nutrients. And I try to push forward, you know, the colorful carbohydrates, more like vegetables, to fill people's diet up in that pie chart on the plate, have it look in a certain fashion. But do you find that when people talk carbohydrates that you have to really get specific, or do you have kind of a general rule that you help people guide them to finding the right carbohydrate mix for them with their protein and fat?
Excellent question. We generally would look for what are considered low glycemic index. In other words, they don't turn into sugar really fast in your body. Like, some people don't do real well if that carb side is all bread or pasta or starchy things, or even fruit. You know, it can be really high glycemic index, and it's just too much sugar. Basically, it's going to turn into sugar too fast in your body, and it won't fuel you. You're ruining the fuel mixture for you. Again, if you're from the mountains of South America, you might do okay on a lot of the starchier, you know, more highly versus the amount of meat and fat that you get. But here in America, you know, there's not a lot of mountain people from the Andes, you know, and we eat more meat and fat, and we need that. It's just bread in our bone. And so, you know, it really is, it's not a racial thing as much as you just want to call it a genetic thing.
Wait, do you see it more as a local, eating local is better for people? I mean, not everybody lived where they grew up, but when you were in an environment, should you tend to eat the type of food for that environment, or do you find that it's more specific to your genetics?
It's almost entirely your genetics. And so I would say maybe entirely. So the idea of paleo and ancestral diet is correct. The theory is right. You should eat the way your ancestors did 500 years or 500 generations ago, if you know who the heck they were and where were they from and what was that food and is it still available today and where can I get it? And, you know, but the idea of eating ancestral is fantastic, but what does that mean? If you're for 500 generations ago and ever since your people were from Borneo, it's going to be a lot different than if they were from Ireland.
Right.
You know, so you know, you know, again, the idea of protein type and carb type is very valid, and there are those in between. And there's a lot of other refinements to it, but basically what I was trying to say is that you get the fuel mixture right, protein, fat, versus high-quality carbs, you brought up a good point, the low glycemic index, called complex carbohydrates, not the simple sugar ones, well, then you would have good energy. And another thing you would have is a sense of satisfaction and satiation. I mentioned cravings. It's really being satisfied by that meal. So I noticed myself that protein and fat, I do really well on a steak. Now, I don't want to eat steak all the time, and I want to use lots of other protein sources because eating too much meat has been shown to be having some negative effects. But meat, you know, I do so well on it. I mean, I can go forever on even just, I don't want to tell you, you know, but just a piece of fatty meat, I do really well on it. Now, I need some carbohydrates. I eat my greens. Okay, I put a lot of greens in there. I eat, fruit. I eat a little bit of starch. But, man, that fuels me. That's how I know it's right for me. Mm-hmm. It's not what you read in a book. It's what feels good. Now, you need one more thing, one more sort of attribute to the right meal. Again, if 2 hours after your meal, you have this sense of satiation, you're not craving, oh, something's missing, God, I got to have a piece of dessert. Something was missing. The ratio was, your fuel mixture's off if you're having cravings. So you should feel satiated. It's the quality of satiety, it's called. And so then you should also feel this energy, good solid energy, like you can make it to the next fuel stop or meal without, having a munch on something. Unless you are burning up the calories, you know, there's some factors there. But you should feel, and you should also have a sense of well-being. Believe it or not, you should be in a pretty good mood. Mm-hmm. If you're cranky for no reason, there's a reason. You know, if you're cranky because your spouse just had an argument about something, well, it's okay to be cranky for a few minutes. You know, or your kids would misbehave, your boss came in and told you to do something you don't want to do, whatever. You can be cranky. If someone cuts you off in traffic, it's okay to be cranky, but not for long. And so if you're just cranky for no reason, you got to look back at that fuel mixture. You got to look back at that ratio. So we just covered D to some extent. There's a lot of other things going on there, but diet, is it that? Maybe you could do better. Rest, you know, you certainly probably could do better. Exercise, you could probably improve. Again, stress reduction and supplements are where people tend to need more help from a health coach or someone like you. That's their business. You know, that's you coach people up on, let's take a look. Me, that's what I do. I actually teach a course in the lab work that will give you the objective markers, but how you feel and look is really important too. And so, you know, with stress reduction, again, we run tests on, do you have parasites, bacteria, funguses, biofilms? Do you have toxicity? Is there food sensitivities involved in your complaints? And well, surely they are.
I know nowadays it's very easy to have, to find many people who have food sensitivities because our food has been, much of it is manufactured, and so there are things in there you don't even know what you're eating unless you go to absolutely clean. You grow it yourself, you get it organically, mm-hmm. You know what you're cooking, then you have less opportunity. And once you learn, I mean, for my clients, I call it a nutrition prescription. That we decide, we go through it together to see what's the right food for you, what's going to fuel your cells. So once you have that nutrition prescription, then you know what you can eat, and then you take ownership. Either you cook your own meals, or you find a place that you have confidence that you're going to get that clean eating out of. And I think that's the key factor with the diet, that you just have to be so aware of what is the right fuel for you.
Yes, well, it's the right fuel for you, and setting aside time for food preparation and, purchasing a food. And if you want it fresh, it means you got to shop, at least once, if not twice a week. Mm-hmm. You can't just get everything at the farmer's market on Sunday. You're going to have to, do some other things. I've actually been ordering some meals that I cook myself, but it comes from a company called Sunbasket. I don't know if you've tried them, Sunbasket. I'm in San Diego, California, so I don't know. They're here. There might be other services like that.
Yeah,
but they send you food, but you actually make it. I made the most delicious new chicken thing last night. It took me a good, 40 minutes or something, but, man, was it worth it, good, wholesome, nutritious.
Mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate. My husband's a great cook, so he cooks. So we do batch cooking, so we have it in advance, and you never have to question. We buy organic, we cook it ourselves, we prepare it and put it away, and so we know every meal what we're eating, and we know that it's to our to our best benefit. And so many people have gone for convenience, and I think that's where things like Sunbasket come in, that it will help people who are not adept at, my husband's just a good cook. He's on the lines of a chef.
Right.
So not everybody's that fortunate. Those services are very helpful.
Yes, ma'am. They sure are.
So we're almost at the end, and I wanted to give you an opportunity. Tell us what you're doing. What's the latest and greatest for you? Any news that you want to share with us, or a tip you want to offer the listeners?
Well, I mean, I have things going on with my business. I teach a course in functional lab work and natural protocols. I teach the labs that you can run to look at the hormones, the immune system, digestion, detoxification. There's labs that a lot of doctors aren't running, and a lot of people go to the doctor and they get told from their standard blood work, everything looks fine. And they know something's wrong.
Right.
So they go out there looking for, and they kind of get sort of in I call it the cycle of trial and error. They're kind of trapped with trying this and trying that. Well, I realized that was an endless loop a long time ago, 20 years ago, and started running labs. I ran thousands of labs on thousands of people. And I made my own observations. I had great mentorship. But now I mentor others on, here's the labs I discovered would give you the most information, the most bang for the buck. Again, on the hormone, immune, digestion, detoxification systems, and some others. And then what to do about it? Well, how do you not treat it like a disease? We don't want to just take pills. Even just selling supplements is pretty much a waste. You want to use the entire DRESS program. That treats every cell, tissue, organ, and system in the body. And as you get healthier, you start firing on all cylinders. All the pieces of the puzzle start to fall together. Your body does get cleaned up in a lot of ways and balanced out in a lot of ways. You have thousands of metabolic processes to consider, but, there's an organized way to go about it. And look at the big pictures, and I just gave you some tips. So I teach a course in that. We've taught over 2,000 people in 50 countries because it's all online. It's a self-paced course. People can take it for their own edification. If you just want to work on yourself, it's worth the price of admission. If you want to turn it around and do it as a business, like a health coaching business, you can do that too, because we have a tremendous support system for our graduates who want to do it professionally. So I have all the those pieces of the puzzle in place to set people up in business for themselves. And they don't have to buy anything. You just need the training and to get the mentality right.
So this has been a great discussion. We could probably have 10 more discussions, because I think you and I think very much alike on how to help people get to their best health. I really do. So,
all right, Angela, I'm welcome to come back anytime. We want to talk about
that. Sounds great. We'll have to plan that out. So thank you again, Reed, for being here. Let me say goodbye to my audience, and we'll touch base again soon. So thank you. So thank you once again for tuning in to Nutrition Prescription. This is Angela Atkins of Your Health Unbound, and until next time, be well.
Thanks so much for listening to Nutrition Prescription with your host, Angela Atkins. Find her online at yourhealthunbound.com, Twitter at Angela C. Atkins, and Facebook.com/AngelaAtkinsHNCoach. We'll see you next time.